You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
Packers Talk.
On this episode of Cheesehead Radio,
the Packers surprise everybody with an overtime win over Dallas.
As Christian Watson finally has his coming out party.
Two once-promising players are sent packing.
And even in victory, Rodgers and LaFleur are still dysfunctional.
Four quarters of Packers talk.
Right here on
Cheesehead Radio.
Hello again, Cheesehead Nation. It is once again time for some Packers news, fun, and frivolity here on Cheesehead Radio, now in our 13th season. As usual, our esteemed hosts tonight are C.D. Angeli of Packers Talk, known as Tundra Vision on Twitter, Kelly Hodgson of Cheesehead Radio, known as That Packer Girl on Twitter, and little old me, Jersey Al of Packers Talk and Cheesehead TV. Find me at Jersey Al GBP on Twitter. Our longtime friends at Ticket King are back as official sponsors of Cheesehead Radio and all the Packers Talk podcasts. Ticket King has been in business for more than 25 years in Wisconsin, with offices right across the street from Lambeau Field and in Milwaukee. For Packers game tickets, please visit their website today at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com, and tell them we sent you. That is it for the preliminaries. Let's get the show on the road.
You know, for 5 weeks, I've kind of dreaded Wednesday nights. It's like, oh my gosh, it's like a funeral. We got to go record a podcast after this embarrassing win. We're going to talk about the same things. Every week, they look terrible. Why aren't they running the ball? Matt LaFleur, Aaron Rodgers. I actually wanted to record this show like right away on Monday night. I mean, I was that excited about this win. What a great win for the Packers. 30-27 overtime win against the Cowboys.
Makes it so much sweeter that it was against the Cowboys and with former coach Mike McCarthy in the house for the first time at Lambeau Field. And he's waxing all poetic about how great it is to be in Lambeau Field and what a special place it is. And the Packers unceremoniously sent him home.
Packers did prove it was a very special place where we still have lots of work ahead of them, but it felt like they righted the ship just a little bit. It was great. You know, I had to listen to the last quarter in the car because I had to go pick up a kid, but as I'm driving down the interstate, it was just intense listening to it. These types of games I almost like better listening on the radio because I get too anxious just watching it. But listening to Wayne go bananas when that field goal went through, he definitely called it the dagger, and it was good to hear him declare a dagger once again.
My son, we were at the game, which was really, really exciting.
Great.
At least in the fourth quarter. For the rest of the game, it was, you know, moments of some fun fanfare, but We had left. We'd gone into the atrium in the third quarter and, you know, gotten a very long line for the restroom, and we're kind of watching a little, you know, kind of warming up a little. It was a chilly night, and my son had looked at me. I know. My son looked at me and says, you know, maybe, you know, after the third quarter, you know, if they're still losing, doesn't look good, maybe we should leave early. And I kind of looked at him and said, well, no. So we go back to our seats, and literally after they went up 28-14, a couple old timers just grabbed their seats and just shoved out past us. And I'm kind of looking at him like, dude, you're leaving already? Come on. You know, we're all kind of laughing because it's like, yeah, it's 28-14. Did that crowd come to life in that fourth quarter in overtime?
And that is one thing I noticed on the radio is how incredibly loud the crowd was.
Never leave.
Which is really exciting because I think only 60% of the fans there were actually Packers fans.
I was about to ask you like what the percentage was. So you think it's around 60-40?
Easily. In fact, I had posted a video on Twitter and on my Facebook of Rudy Ford's first interception. And I was actually, the reason I had videotaped it is because I thought the Cowboys were going to score because it was in the end zone.
Right.
And I wanted to illustrate by going around and say, look how many Cowboy fans, you know, because on the first touchdown.
Cheering for the touchdown.
It was as loud as Packers fans cheering. It was just crazy. It was easily 40% Cowboys fans. They were all over the place.
And that always bums me out that enough Packer fans sell their tickets. You know, granted, the Packers weren't doing so great, so I'm not surprised. But every time I try to get rid of my tickets, I make sure that it goes to someone who's actually a Packers fan.
No kidding.
If the Packers, if their record was flipped, you know, if they were 6-3 or something like that, and Dallas was coming in, there would not have been as many Dallas fans in there, you know. But certainly the way things have been going this season kind of diminished the interest in a lot of fans' eyes. And, you know, can't always necessarily find somebody from Wisconsin to go, I don't think. So it's understandable.
Oh, I can usually find someone to go, CD.
I think one of the cool things coming out of this whole, if you're as old as we are, you remember the 1990s and the literal PTSD that many of us slightly older timers have from those playoff losses year after year after year before we got to the Super Bowl. And I mean, there are still people today who will declare the Cowboys one of our number one rivals just because of those days. And when you really think back in the last decade or so, we've really pulled the rug out from under Cowboys fans more than once, whether it was Dez Bryant, whether it was Brandon Bostic doing his, you know, little hee-hee on the, you know, Michael Jackson on the sideline and Mason Crosby kicking a field goal. Those Cowboy fans look so dejected walking out. It was like, not again. God, I hate the Packers. Why do they always do this to us? And I'm like, that's how we felt in the 90s. That's so cool. Yeah,
come on. I still remember John Yurkovic being hauled out on the Gator, you know, cursing out Dallas as he blew out his knee. You know, I'm still bitter about the 90s. I can still picture Deion Sanders flapping his gums at us as we lose. Blah, I hate the Cowboys.
Yeah, on Twitter, former Packer Lane Taylor tweeted, "How much do you think Cowboy fans hate Aaron Rodgers?" And I responded to him, "As much as Packer fans hate Troy Aikman." Pretty obvious. Well,
we would be remiss. We really do not talk about the breakout game, which everyone seemed to be predicting on Twitter ahead of the game. And I was a little nervous. I didn't want to do it. But everyone's on Twitter. This is going to be Christian Watson's breakout game. This is the one. This is his, coming out and showing the world what he can do. And I was like, oh gosh, don't do this. Cause I have a Christian Watson jersey. Let's not curse this, please. Let's just ease our expectations and see how it goes. And of course, our expectations were eased on his first couple passes.
Yeah, but those first two drops drove me just bananas. And I think I tweeted, good God, kid, you have one job.
Feel good, though, that he managed to, you know, to overcome. And obviously, in a huge way, he managed to overcome. And hopefully, you know, at this point, he's on the right track and those drops are behind him.
But if you look at the stats, they're like mind-boggling. He had those two drops, and then he had four catches, three of them for touchdowns.
It's a good day.
It was a very good day.
Good day. I put a little money on him scoring a touchdown, so I was happy.
Did you really?
I did.
Oh my God, Al!
I felt it. I said I should win. I should have won three times.
Yeah, no kidding.
But unfortunately, they don't work that way.
No, you should have gotten triple the amount. Right. And his backflip was kind of fun.
Oh yeah. I was just worried about his hamstring. I'm like, oh, God, I hope he doesn't re-injure himself doing that.
Yeah, no kidding, because that takes a lot of force to flip.
Exactly. And then landing like that, you know. Anyway,
we got through it. And for those who like obscure trivia, he tied Randy Moss's rookie record for three touchdowns in a single game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you mentioned this a couple weeks ago, Al, and that if you're going to draw a comparison, what do you want Christian Watson to be? You know, if Romeo Doubs is going to be our new Davante Adams, you know, what is Christian Watson? You're like, he's going to be our next Megatron. I mean, that's what you want to aspire with his athleticism.
Right. His size. That's what you aspire. Yeah.
But then you're also thinking Randy Moss, you know, not that I like Randy Moss by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, when you saw that adjustment on that catch on that first long touchdown, that was tough. That was tough over the shoulder.
And you know, sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you. The amazing, what I thought of at that point when he did that was, that's actually a Davante Adams catch. That's the catch that Rodgers and Adams perfected, where he just puts it on his outside shoulder on the sideline, and at the last second, Adams brings his hands over and pulls it down on his right shoulder. You know, if it's assuming it's on that side, that's what I thought of at that moment.
Yeah, that was definitely not a rookie reception. That was something that takes not just luck, a hell of a lot of skill. And I'm really impressed that Rodgers didn't give up on him, because Rodgers is so fickle. I figured, and I think I even tweeted it, after the two drops, it's like, well, you might as well not target, you know, defense shouldn't cover him, because he's not going to catch anything the rest of the game. But I'm pleasantly surprised, and I'm pleased to have been proven wrong.
And here's something that I saw, which I don't know if it was true or not. I meant to follow up and check on it, but I didn't. I saw somebody, this was actually on Cheesehead TV, on a commenter said that he noticed that Watson was wearing like these white gloves at the beginning of the game when he dropped those two, had those first two drops. And then after that, he was wearing a different pair of gloves after that. If true, that's pretty interesting. I don't know if it's true. I wish I had remembered to go look at the video and check on that. But anyway, just want to throw that out there.
Well, and this is a rookie, which we know, and we've had to temper ourselves all season saying, yes, he's quote-unquote almost a first-round rookie, you know, awfully close. But no first-rounders typically have, you know, fantastic seasons, especially, you know, maybe you're a high first-round pick. But, you know, you see him come out and do this, and it's exciting, and you get excited for the future, and you get excited for me to be wearing my Christian Watson jersey, which every single touchdown, I turned around to everyone in my section and just, you know, pulled on my jersey and said, take a look at this. By the time that game was done, they were calling me Christian Watson. I was like, yeah, it's my twin down there, man. Yeah, that's it. So really excited. It's exciting.
But only one game. Let's keep that in mind.
But he wasn't the only player that had a fabulous game. Let's talk about Rudy Ford.
Rudy,
and where did he come from?
Rudy.
His real name is actually Jonathan. I found that out today. I'm like, how did you get Rudy out of that?
It had to do with the movie. I read some story that...
Yeah, Rudy's was totally offside. I can't do Sam.
Well, okay, Miss Killjoy.
Yeah, I'm Killjoy.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But how about Rudy Ford?
How about him? How about a safety actually jumping her out? How about that?
Yeah.
Well, instead of just sitting back and waiting till the receiver catches the ball and then trying to tackle him. How about that?
But it was really kind of the butterfly effect of Stokes being out. With Stokes out, it forced the Packers to play Savage in the slot. And Ford as the safety, it was kind of refreshing. Not watching Savage kind of just watch it kind of go by him.
Yeah, I won't say that it forced them. They could have kept Savage at safety and put Nixon in the slot, which they have done before. They weren't forced. I think it was a conscious decision.
But it was a really good conscious decision.
Okay, and Savage did play safety as well. He played about two-thirds of the snaps in the slot. He played some at safety. He played some at outside corner, actually a couple of snaps. I was looking at the breakdown the other day. So they did move him around, and that's probably a good thing. Don't keep him in one place where people know where to find him.
I thought we were going to be screwed with Stokes out, but I liked that configuration, honestly. It was just a little different than what we've seen in other parts of the season, and it paid off.
Yeah, it seemed to work.
And I think when you really look at it all together, the Packers should not have won this game. I mean, if you look at all the odds and how they've been doing and how well the Cowboys have been doing, I think we said they would have had to have played a perfect game in order to win it. And they did not play a perfect game, but they did so many of the things that we've been talking about. I mean, I think they were almost even exactly for rushing and passing yards in the game.
Yeah, it was definitely it was like
207 and 206.
Yeah, I know there were over 200 for rushing yards.
Right.
But you know, LaFleur came into this knowing he's going up against the former guy, so to speak. He was not going to let the apathy of the last couple games get the better of the Packers. I was very impressed. You know, they weren't perfect, but they were good enough.
All right. Well, we are going to call this one a win.
That's good enough for a win.
Yay!
Our first win of a quarter in the last, what?
Month? Over a month.
Oh, God.
So, 1-0, let's go to the second quarter. And And since we're so excited about the win, let's go to something that's not quite as fun, which got a little bit of notoriety this weekend. Of course, we expected a lot coming out of Pat McAfee, but in a win in which everything should have been happy, there were some silly decisions made in the waning minutes of regulation. Sitting in the stands, even all the people were sitting around me going like, "Well, you just let 30 seconds go off the clock."
Oh, yeah, you like, betcha.
Like none of us knew that. And I didn't see it until it was, you know, obviously I was at the game, so I didn't see it until I got home. But Mr. Rogers may not have been very happy with his head coach for that reason.
Oh, gee whiz. The head coach wanted to call some plays. I'm sorry.
So help me understand this, because even Nagler mentioned this right in the moment on Twitter, that this should have all been on Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has declared in the past when it's a 2-minute drill, he calls the plays. He takes care of things.
He and has declared. Nagler
came, yeah, he has said it. So Nagler came out and called Rodgers out on it. But then both of them seemed to say, nope, this all came from the sideline. And Matt LaFleur even took responsibility for it. So what's the difference? What was happening there? Was this completely on LaFleur?
Well, I think he kind of said that it was, right?
Yes.
What did he say? He
but said LaFleur always said that takes blame, though. That's the problem.
He said that there was too much indecision on his part. And that he usually gives Rodgers a ton of freedom to run the show, but he gave them less this time, and that was on me, LaFleur says. So he's saying I messed up by not letting Rodgers run the show, which is kind of weird for me to hear a coach say that, but it is what it is in Green Bay.
But, you know, that's so typical of Matt LaFleur. He's always the one to fall on his own sword. And yeah, I don't know how this shakes out because, yeah, I'm used to Rodgers, and I think we all are, with 2 minutes to go, taking charge of things. And most of the times, especially in years past, it worked out well. You look at the last couple of games, and it's been kind of a whimper at the end. You know, we just kind of fizzled out. So is that why LaFleur decided to take charge of, okay, we're going to do something other than rocket ball at the end? I don't know.
Well, if you've been trying to make the point that, hey, LaFleur, you should take over and not let Aaron Rodgers, you know, call every play and, you know, take every run pass option as a pass. You should be in charge. Be the coach. He didn't do a whole lot to help his cause if that's what he did and then completely screwed this up.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. That's a fair point.
A dippy story that I always remember that always hit me really hard. But in the 1999 season, Ray Rhodes was head coach and they had gotten off to a fairly good start. And he had made some really dumb decisions. I want to say it was like the fourth or fifth game against Oakland at the time. And Brett Favre had played some hero ball and won the game at the end. And I remember Ray Rhodes came out in that press conference after that game and said, I just want to personally thank Brett Favre for winning that game for us. And it really struck me. Like, you're the coach, dude. And obviously, as we know with Ray Rhodes in his season, it really went downhill from there.
Oh,
and
it totally imploded.
And I always attributed it to that moment. I always attributed it to he kind of ceded his own authority and power and basically said, here's a veteran quarterback and basically you're running the team and you're doing it better than I can. And I worry about LaFleur taking this tone and this tact all the time where it's like, gosh, I'm really sorry, Mr. Rodgers. I screwed that up and I should just let you run the show from now on. I mean, that it's not boding well if there's any repeat of history.
No, and I think if LaFleur wants to survive as the head coach, he's obviously going to outlast Aaron Rodgers. He needs to assert himself as the head coach where the buck starts and ends with him, where he is the, you know, the one that makes the decisions, not the quarterback. Because what is it going to be like when we have another starting quarterback and he's a complete, you know, people walk all over him. He's got to assert some sort of authority there and keep saying, well, it was my fault. I'm sorry. Just is not a good look for a leader.
So real quick, just let me ask you guys the question, whether it was LaFleur's fault, whether it was Rodgers' fault, no matter whose fault it is it okay for your quarterback to come to the sideline and demean your coach like that in front of the rest of the team, in front of cameras? Is this okay? Does Rodgers really deserve and get that pass?
I mean, I think that heat of the moment, things like that happen on the football field. You have seen it from other quarterbacks. Tom Brady is famous for doing things like that. And then everything is fine afterwards. So I'm not making as big a deal out of it as a lot of people are personally. They kissed and made up. Okay.
It still rubs me the wrong way because I can think of several games. One was like 2012, 2013, when the Packers played against the Bengals at Cincinnati and Rodgers was going off on McCarthy. And that whole last season, when McCarthy was shown the door, Rodgers was going off on him. It's like, okay, we've got a pattern going. And our coach is just so willing to give him such a wide berth that that's okay. I don't think it's okay because that really is toxic to team dynamics. I really like that after the game, LaFleur really said it was a team victory where everybody played their part. You know, he wasn't deferring to any one person for saving the day. It really, you know, I like that mentality better than one player thinks he's better than the rest of the team.
Yeah, doesn't bother me, but okay. We can disagree.
All I know is that Mike McCarthy had to be watching that from the other sideline going like, yeah, see, that's what happened to me.
Not my monkey, not my circus.
I don't know. There was quite a love fest going on at Lambeau Field with Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. What a love fest. Time heals all wounds, I guess.
All right. Well, at the end of that, I guess we're going to call that, I don't know, do we call that a win, push, loss? What do you guys think?
Push.
So 1-0-1. As we head into halftime, we're going to step in the locker room. Please enjoy this message from our sponsor. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field?
Yeah.
If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King.
Oh, yeah.
Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay.
Green Bay. Oh, yeah.
Just go to their website.
Do it.
TheTicketKing.com. Again, that's TheTicketKing.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Cheesehead Radio Victory Week. Very short victory week as we go into a game on Thursday. My name is CeeDee Angeli, and I am flanked by Kelly Hodgson and Jersey Al Bracco. Thank you for joining us. We're going to have to talk a little bit about some big moves that took place on Tuesday. Unexpected, but two players, named players, and obviously not Aaron Rodgers or Randall Cobb or Kenny Clark, but two players were released yesterday for two completely different reasons. But I suppose there's some parallels you can take with both of them. The biggest one, of course, was wide receiver and erstwhile punt returner Amari Rodgers. Was released. Talk to me a little bit about this, guys.
Well, I think his stats for his last game speak for themselves. 8 receptions, or on the year, 8 receptions, 7 fumbles. Granted, it was only his second year, but this was his reputation. You know, he couldn't forward the ball in any meaningful way, made bad decisions. The ball bounced off his face a couple times. And I don't think he's a horrible player, but he just needed a fresh start somewhere else, as I think is what it ultimately came down to. I'm okay with the cut. I think they needed to move on from him. And yeah, he could have played a role with the receiving core, but he was so far down on the depth chart that I'm okay with giving him a fresh start.
Yeah, I think he had obviously lost confidence in himself. It showed in his play, especially on returning punts. And he never quite really lived up to what people expected from him. Now, normally you get more than 2 years for a third round pick to prove that. But the problems with the punt returning and the fumbles are just way too much to endure, basically. And another reason is you've got Randall Cobb, who is pretty much ready to come back to the team. So somebody was going to have to be moved anyway. And, you know, he was the guy that had similar role in the offense if they chose to use him as Cobb. So it made sense from that reason, too.
You know, Andy Herman actually made a really good comment in the middle of the game and said, you know, these mistakes, these risks, these fumbles, these muffs, these bobbles would be acceptable if there was a high reward that came with the risk. I mean, if this guy
took a couple to the house, right?
Yeah. I mean, if he was Desmond Howard on every other play, you swallow it and you suck it up, but he's not giving it. He wasn't giving us that. There was no in any of his returns.
No.
If he got 6-7 yards, we felt lucky.
Yeah, it was if it didn't bounce off his face, he was fair catching it or going backwards. It's like there was no progression as a player in the past 2 years. It was just catch the ball, try not to screw up. And there wasn't any trying to make a play. You're right.
Now, he has been picked up by the Houston Texans already, so he's got another job. And, you know, maybe he can go there and turn his career around, you know. Hope he does.
It'll be good, but the Texans, boy, are they a mess. Absolute mess. Their wide receiver room is actually even a worse mess than the rest of the team. So, yeah, he's certainly not going to go into a very healthy situation, which is a pity because with everything that happened with Devontae leaving and MVS leaving and Equanimeous leaving, you know, the door was there for him to be with what really should have been a solid offense. Obviously a Pro Bowl, All Pro, Hall of Fame quarterback to work him in. And he just never was able to step up. He wasn't able to fill that role. We needed him to do it and he didn't fill it in. And now he's in just a complete poop show down in Houston.
Complete poop show.
Well, I didn't want to say
because technical term. We are a PG friendly show.
Unless you listen to Lempesis. It is interesting to note.
Hey, I was told we had to be PG because Elsa.
Yes.
Yes. Well, his grandpa gets upset about that. But
absolutely.
Our 2021 ex-Packers wide receivers, not faring necessarily the best. Devontae Adams with the Raiders, now 2-7, was just basically throwing his teammates under the bus in a post-game interview this weekend.
Oh, didn't see that.
Good luck.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Well, there's a link there. You can click on it.
Yep, I will.
Equanimeous St. Brown, Bears 3-7, and he's getting he's getting tagged on why did we lose? You know, the good, bad, the ugly. He's bad or ugly. Not doing well there. Obviously, Amari Rodgers now going to the Texans, who are 1-7-1. Malik Taylor, free agent, still hasn't been signed by anyone. And then the only one having any success is MVS with the Chiefs. 7-2, yeah. But he sat out practice today. He might not be playing on Sunday. So none of these five receivers who were on our roster last year, other than MVS, no one's really having the success that maybe they would have had last year or might have been having this year if we could have afforded them.
Yeah, so what does that mean?
It just means they're on teams that are struggling. Other
yeah,
than MVS.
Exactly. They're on bad teams except for MVS.
And I don't think it's because Rodgers was a kingmaker. I think you need the combination of a good receiver and a good quarterback. And I think they're all proving, you know, Devontae chose poorly. MVS, obviously, is a good receiver with a good quarterback. Poor Equanimeous, a rising quarterback. And maybe he's finally showing how he's topping out. I don't know. But if he's getting blamed for things, he's obviously not their number one receiver, or they wanted more from him. So that's a mismatch, too, for him. I don't read anything into it. It's just you deal with the talent you have in front of you, and you really can't compare to what was there because you're seeing a mishmash of productivity among the other receivers. You've got MVS is probably going to do a long push into the postseason, and then on the other side, you have Malik Taylor that's probably going to watch the rest of the season from a couch. So who knows?
Right. And obviously in other news, not quite as much impact, but Kylin Hill was also cut yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know about the whole drama behind it until I was reading about it today. So can anyone else clue me into what's going on other than he sounds like he's a big whiny sack?
I mean, I just know I've read the same thing you read, so don't know anything more than that. But evidently there was problems in the locker room. He was disgruntled and, you know, felt he needed to play more. I don't know how he feels he's going to need to play more behind Jones and Dylan. And evidently he wasn't a good influence in the locker room. And they said, you know what? We don't need this type of negativity. Sorry.
So, and what was neat is that LaFleur was actually pretty pointed about it in a press conference. I mean, he was asked about it, you know, here's a guy who, you know, we just was criticizing for, you know, being flim-flammy and, oh, yeah, you know, that's probably my fault. Da, 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 da. Here he's like, no, these are the expectations we have, and he isn't doing it. He's not part of it here, and he's in a loaded room. You got to be gone. And it was pretty blunt from him. So it was cool. The move with Amari Rodgers also hit the locker room pretty hard, particularly the wide receiver room. Sammy Watkins a fellow Clemson guy, was pretty vocal. He said, wow, this is huge. I was not expecting this. I feel bad for him. He works hard. Now you got Kylan Hill, who is a cancer, in the room. Now he's gone. Is this LaFleur sending a message to the other 51 guys on this team?
Maybe. And he's doing it in kind of a low risk scenario. You know,
that's the point I was going to make. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, you've got two guys that were kind of bottom of the barrel, and you can make examples of them, and it's pretty easy.
They were easy moves to make.
And yeah, I can't believe Kylan Hill's like, well, I want to play more. Well, have you seen who's ahead of you in the depth chart, honey? You're just kind of like the squirrels I used to coach. It's like, I'm going to put you in when I put you in, and you're not going to complain about what position I put you in, because I'm going to put you in where you're going to make the biggest impact. I'm not going to. And that's kind of what it sounded like the whiny little 9-year-olds that I coach sometimes. But yeah, it gives LaFleur two opportunities to assert that he's in charge with very little risk.
Well, interesting to see how this will play out and if it does have an impact. But we'll get to the third quarter, I guess. Addition by subtraction. Is this a win?
It brings Cobb back and it gets a whiner out of the locker room. Either a push or a win.
We'll give it a slight win.
Slight win.
An overtime win.
Okay, so 1.5, 0, and 1.5. So here we go. Fourth quarter, obviously we're looking ahead. This is a short week. If you're listening to this, hopefully it's Thursday, and there's already a game tonight. So, wow. So
listen to this as you're heading to the game.
We're already, we're doing game review, and we already get to do game prep. But I guess the biggest thing now is, the big thing I keep reading from people is that this was a season-saving win for the Packers, this win over the Cowboys. I guess this now has to beg the question at 4-6, do you believe that this team can now make the playoffs? Do you believe they can effectively, they almost have to win out, if not only maybe one more loss, to sneak into a wild card? What's your belief right now in this team actually being able to do that?
Well, I didn't believe that they were going to beat Dallas, and they did, right? So I'm willing to keep an open mind here and say that, can they beat the Titans and keep this going? Of course they can. We just saw the Washington Commanders beat the Eagles for the first time. So the Eagles are not, perfect. They're not unbeatable. Is it possible? Of course it's possible. Don't know that I have a lot of confidence about it, but I'm not going to close my mind to it. The season is still on. And yeah, they can probably afford to lose one more game and that's it. So we'll see what happens. One game at a time, as Mr. LaFleur likes to say.
I guess anything is possible, but this really is starting to look like a scenario that you could eke into the playoffs as long as Team A, Team B, Team C, and Team D all lose out. And I never like being in a position that your destiny is determined by other people. Yeah, you win out, we'll be, 10-6? And that's usually good enough to get to the playoffs. I'm just happy we won this week. And I'm not ready to look at January because we've only won one game in a long time. Start winning more in a row and maybe I'll be more willing to talk about the playoffs. But right now it seems awfully premature.
Well, it's premature, but right now the Packers would be the 9th seed out of 7 that would make it. The reality is, yeah, I would say the NFC North seems to be a foregone conclusion, but the other teams that are with them or only slightly ahead of them for the wild card really only have 4-6 wins each, too. I mean, you're talking about Washington and the Giants and Tampa Bay and Dallas. They're not that far ahead. Now, obviously, they're going to win games, too, but they don't need to lose out. We're already within a game or two of those teams for a wild card. The only problem is so many of them we've already played, and while we now have an advantage over Tampa Bay or Dallas, we do not have an advantage over Washington or the Giants, which is why some of those games may become important in the long run if we might think we could sneak into that 7th or 6th wildcard spot. So let's talk a little bit about the Titans. So Packers have a lot of momentum. We're all excited. We're hosting another game at Lambeau Field just, 4 or 5 days later. But this is a different team. This is not the Cowboy. This is Derrick Henry of the Tennessee Titans with Ryan Tannehill also back at quarterback. What are you guys thinking? Does this team have the ability to stop a team like the Titans?
I wish. Devondre Campbell was not hurt.
That would help. That would help having a physical linebacker in the middle. You know, McDuffie is gonna be a busy guy. He's probably gonna get a lot of snaps this game. You know, they're probably gonna stick with two linebackers inside as much as they can to try to keep Derrick Henry in check. You know, the thing about the Titans is, you know, their quarterback is really not that good, and their receivers are really pretty poor. I mean, they don't have any good receivers. You know, they gave up, you know, 400 yards to the Cowboys on Sunday, but that's with a much better passing offense. What concerned me was that they gave up a decent amount of rushing yards to the Cowboys, and they gave up a lot of, like, 10-yard runs, you know, especially on draw plays, and that's got to get better. You know, that they have to make a focus this week, and I imagine that they will. So we'll see whether they have the horses to do that or not.
Now, the Titans, to be fair, have the worst passing offense in the league and also the second worst pass defense in the league. So the Titans win games on the ground by controlling, obviously, the other team's rushers, which, you know, we realized we kind of like doing if we want to actually win games. Is this the kind of game where Joe Barry has to look at it and say, if you have this poor of a quarterback, this poor receivers, do you take Jair? Do you take Rasul? Do you take Rudy Ford? Play the man-to-man on their receivers and stick eight guys in the box and just say, you know, we're just gonna, you're gonna have to beat us through the air. I mean, can you do that, or are they gonna stick with this stupid cover two thing?
They'll get gashed if they stick with cover two.
Especially the stupid cover two thing.
Exactly. Oh, that's my lead. I can't believe he calls it. You read his lips, stupid cover two. Like, dude.
You know, you're probably going to see some variations of that, if not an eight-man box and maybe a seven, obviously depending on the down and distance. You know, with Derrick Henry, really the main thing is to keep him away from those big runs where he breaks free, right? And they did it last year. You know, they did it when they played the Titans. They kept him about as well in check, I think, as any team did. But you see how dangerous he is and where he breaks through the line and gets into the secondary. Despite being so huge, he just loses people. He just leaves them in his dust. So that's going to be the key, is try to funnel him inside where there's a scrum is, and just try to control him that way.
All right. Well, some tentative faith, but obviously some also tenuous waiting for this game on Thursday night, and hopefully the Packers can live up to the hype they've created for themselves. We're going to call this fourth quarter a push as well. So overall, a winning record. Good job, team. Way to go. And with that, we're going to get to this week's game prediction.
Cheesehead Radio. Packers game predictions.
It's the Green Bay all-white uniforms making their annual appearance on Thursday Night Football as the suddenly coherent Packers host the Tennessee Titans and Derrick Henry. Now, a week ago, not a single one of us would have given the Packers a chance against the 6-3 Titans, but the odds makers have opened up Green Bay as a 3-point favorite at home.
Really?
So, really no advantage, but okay.
Can Green Bay continue this momentum and ride a 2-game win streak into a mini bye week? Jersey Al, as always, we'll start with you.
Well, you can call me shocked that the Packers were able to go from looking horrendous against the Lions to looking like their old selves against the Cowboys. The question is, was it the arrival of the Cowboys and Mike McCarthy that stirred up the necessary juices, or did they finally find a formula that can be sustainable over the course of the season? I'm not willing to commit to the latter one, but I'm going to take a big leap of faith here and say that the Packers will record their second straight win and beat the Titans by a score of 23-17.
And before I launch into my prediction, since the Packers are wearing all white tomorrow night, if you're going to the game, and this actually airs before the game, wear a white jersey. Let's match the team. But anyway, call me crazy. But a win against, but a win against the Cowboys at home against Mike McCarthy, no less, breathed some life into this team that I thought was dead in the water. Last week, I was less convinced that the Packers would be able to keep up with the Titans' punishing run game. After all, defending the run has been a bit of their Achilles heel all season, and it doesn't help that Campbell is still injured. But if they play like they did last week with a lot of heart, they can hang with the Titans and they'll have a chance. And I'm banking on those type of odds. Packers 27, Titans 24.
Okay, I was at the game last week, and let me tell you, the crowd was about as joyous as I've seen since, well, you know, expectations were really low, like back in the 90s. It'll be really interesting to see if the Packers can keep it going. But instead of trusting Dak Prescott to make mistakes with his arm, they're going to have to find a way to keep Derrick Henry from blasting through their defensive line. If Adrian Amos or Darnell Savage is leading the team in tackles, it's going to be a bad sign. As much as I want to believe, the Packers have not done enough for me to believe that Henry will not take over the game like last week. I sure hope I'm wrong, but Titans 24, Packers 20.
CD Angeli, Merchant of Doom.
Official title.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio, now in our 13th season. Make sure to head over to PackersTalk.com, where you can listen to several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow at PackersTalkNet on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts can be heard on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the pod, show us some love and leave us a review. You can also find us on Siri, Alexa, or Google just by saying Play Packers Talk Podcast. Finally, be sure to support our sponsor, The Ticket King. You can find them across the street from Lambeau Field or in Milwaukee or on the web at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. It's Thursday Night Football. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go. I think you always get flubbed up on Play Packers Talk Podcast. Is that like a tongue twister for you?
It's the alliteration that just gets me, and it's like, oh, la, la.
Try once. Go ahead.
Play Packers Talk Podcast.
Okay. Say toy boat three times.
Okay.
Toy boat, toy boat, toy boat.
Jersey Al?
In between. Yes. What?
Go ahead. Try it.
What?
Say toy boat three times fast.
Toy boat, toy boat, toy boat.
See, he's good. Now try
to have to pause in between.
Try to do it without pausing.
Play Packers Talk Podcast.
No, no, toy boat.
The other one. Times.
Toy boat, toy boat, toy boat.
Winner!
Hard. Oh my God.